This episode of Reality Life is brought to you in part by Milk. Keep listening to discover how Milk adds more to your day. Now, here's the show.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. I hope that you guys had a great holiday. Happy New Year. I know this is probably going to be a shock to all of you, but I was home on New Year's Eve with my husband and my kids. They drank sparkling cider and imitated me, which was pretty funny. My resolution this year is to get out more. I feel like I'm scrolling through Instagram all the time and everybody is going to fun parties and doing fun things. So listen, invite me to stuff. I'd love an invite over for dinner, for cocktails, for karaoke, whatever it is. If you're in the area, let me know. And maybe I'll actually leave my house. That would be fun. This week's episode I'm really excited about. Hugh Atchison is from Top Chef Masters and Top Chef. He's got a really interesting career and he gives some great inside scoop about what it's like on set of Top Chef. Now, I do believe that there are two kinds of people in this world, those that have waited tables and those that have not. I think it is imperative for every young person to spend a little bit of time working in a restaurant. It is so hard, I have to say that. It is really hard, and it really teaches you how horrible people can be and how wonderful people can be. I worked in restaurants when I was in college. So the first place I worked was Tortilla Coast, which is a Tex-Mex place on the Hill, on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. Very famous. So a lot of senators and representatives came by. And in the first job that I had, I was the host. And so inevitably, somebody would call me and during the lunchtime rush and say, well, I just got to tell you that Senator blah 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 is on his way over. So he's going to need, you know, a four top. And there's like a line out the door. And I took great joy in telling them that they basically can go screw off. I don't care what state they're from, but there are not enough tables. They really wanted to pull their weight to get, you know, some chips and salsa. And we had a catering manager. Her name was Candy Khan. She was really strange and always had wrinkled clothes. And then I became a bartender and I got fired because I gave a free pitcher of margaritas, frozen strawberry margaritas, to another restaurant's bartender. The manager, Don, fired me. He used to wear this one of those bracelets that said, "What would Jesus do?" And it really, you know, upset me for quite a while. And then I thought about, you know, what would Jesus would do, Don? He'd give a free pitcher of margaritas, especially to a fellow bartender who you know will bring business to your bar. So you snooze, you lose. What are you doing now, Don? I'd like to know that. And then I worked at Tony and Joe's on the waterfront in Georgetown. If you're ever in Georgetown, you probably know it. My friend Tim Ryan and I would play this game called Celebrity, where we were so bored, we would look at the people who were at the restaurant and try to pick out who they look like in terms of doppelgangers for celebrities. And that would make me pee my pants. But the most cruel thing that we would do is that when new servers would join the restaurant staff, we made up a fake birthday song and dance and told them that that was restaurant policy. So, you know, if one of your customers says it's their birthday, this is what you need to do to celebrate it. So I'm probably going to hell for that. Now, then I asked Andrew Robin, who I met at preschool. Our kids were in preschool together. He's hysterical. The guy watches so much reality TV. You guys would love him. He reviews Instant Hotel. This is a great new show on Netflix. I know that you're looking for new shows all the time. You're going to basically watch all the episodes in like 2 days. So the series follows homeowners who have transformed their homes into hotels and are individually judged by each other to receive the highest score, with the winner winning an ultimate prize, which you find out is to go to America and stay in a VBRO. So it's a really good show. I want you to watch that. And then I've been watching Real Housewives of New Jersey, which, by the way, is getting much better than it has been in the last couple seasons. And Danielle Staub is just a bit player on the show now. She's just like a friend of the show. She was the one in the first season that Teresa flipped out about and threw the table. She had that book that was written about her. Anyway, she got married to some former baseball player named Marty. And the wedding is a destination wedding in Bimini. Now, it's her third wedding. I need to know what you guys think about this. If it's your third wedding, should you have 9 bridesmaids and matching dresses? Should you have a bachelorette party? Should you be registering for gifts? I think it's pretty ridiculous. Wanted to know what you think. Also, the woman clearly went off the rails. She was screaming at everyone. She had them wear these matching bridal squad onesie bathing suits and then did a photo shoot and then yelled at them that they weren't model material. So, I think it was a little out of line. I want to know what you guys think. I'm pretty sure everyone kind of saw from the beginning that that marriage wouldn't last. I think it ended up lasting 8 weeks. And it made me think of my own first wedding. Remember, I got married when I was like 23 years old. It lasted like a year and a half. I went to college. I met a guy that was in the ceremonial guard through my best friend, Dan. So he was in the military. And we got married and spent almost no time together. And it didn't last long. But out of it, I got a bunch of awesome friends who lived in the town of Virginia Beach with me. But anyway, the wedding was a disaster. And I wrote an article about it. I'm going to post it in the Facebook group so you can read it. If you've ever had a disastrous first marriage, you would understand. It was a shit show from the beginning. Let's just put it this way. My groom's brother tried to strangle him at the rehearsal dinner. I didn't even want to hang out with the groom at my own wedding reception. Like, I kept avoiding him. Also, my sister, Megan, she eloped 2 weeks before, and she brought her own photo album to the wedding. I mean, it was a disaster of epic proportions. So look for that in the Facebook group, the article about my first wedding. So anyway, the reason I bring this up is that I was fascinated by the wedding. It was a real disaster, Danielle Staub's wedding. So I tracked down Julius Michael, who did her hair, and all the bridesmaids, and Priscilla, who did all their makeup too. They're the ones that you always see in the background when they show like behind the scenes of reunions or Watch What Happens Live. They're like the makeup hair team. So I tracked them down to ask them what was really happening that weekend, that wedding weekend, because it was quite an episode. Remember, it's so important to subscribe to the show and to leave an iTunes review. Please make sure you do that. So please enjoy this week's episode. Here we go. You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. I am so excited. I get to talk to Hugh Atchison. He is chef, author. He's a TV personality, a Top Chef Masters competitor turned Top Chef judge. He is a 6-time James Beard nominee, 2-time James Beard award winner, unless you've won some more and I'm not sure of. You're an author. You're also the owner and head chef of 5 restaurants in the South and a huge advocate for supporting communities by eating locally grown food, which everybody appreciates. Tell me a little bit about you. I know that you were born and raised in Ottawa, Canada. You're the youngest of 4 kids, only boy. At age 15, you began to work in restaurants after school. Tell me a little bit about how your love for cooking began and how your career sort of took off.
You know, I was kind of raised by a single father and with 3 older sisters. And my family is a very academic family. A lot of go-getter, very smart people with a lot of PhDs and things like that. And I was a bit of the black sheep. So I just I started cooking when I was quite a young age. And after school, starting at 14, 15, I'd go and work in restaurants. And I just happened to get a lot of really good experience over the time. And it just always felt like a place that I belonged and I felt comfortable in and could excel in a place where I didn't really seem to have the focus for school. I'd much rather skip classes and go play snooker and things like that.
And then how did you sort of work your way up?
You know, the culinary world is slow in working your way up. So, you know, I was a chef or a young line cook and dishwasher and things like that. And then eventually became a sous chef. And I moved to Montreal and worked at a very reputable restaurant that I think is no longer there now, but called Buena Notte, which was on Saint-Laurent, Montreal. and then moved back to Ottawa and worked across the river in Hull, Quebec at a very fine dining French restaurant called Henri Berger. And just, you know, never went to cooking school, but was trained by a lot of amazing chefs throughout the years and just got a lot of very professional aptitude at a pretty young age. You know, it wasn't, they weren't the pirate-led kitchens. They were very brigade system, very regimented French kitchens.
Did you ever feel like anyone gave you a hard time because you were self-taught?
No, I mean, I think that the, I think the, that we've learned that over the years that the culinary schools are a bit of an industry of themselves, and some of them can do great work and teach people the right skills, and other ones have a hard time getting people ready for an industry that, you know, takes a long time to really break into and develop enough experience to lead a kitchen. And, you know, it's kind of a slow roll in becoming a chef in the old school, and people come out of culinary schools these days and think that they're just ready to be a chef right out of the gate, and it's usually not the case. So, no, I never felt that way, though.
And then the style of cooking that you started with, many of the restaurants that you have now sort of have a certain flair to them. Is that the kind of cooking that you began with, or did that sort of change over your career?
I think it changes still every day. I think that positioning yourself as a learner in life is really important, and read a lot and travel a lot and pick up different ideas over time. But it's always been based in very much a cooking from the larder of the community in which I'm in, but guided by principles of French and Italian food and technique. But, you know, I've lived in the American South for well over 20 years now, so I cook from the larder of the American South, but tinged with very much French concepts and technique and Italian wherewithal and nourishment. So
in 2010, you competed on Bravo's Top Chef Masters and then returned as a judge on Top Chef. Tell me a little bit about how that came to fruition, the opportunity to work on TV.
You know, it's funny. Bravo had called me a number of times to be possibly on Top Chef, and I'd always kind of turn them down. And I was getting a little bit more press, and it kind of, we had a number of years under our belt at 5 and 10, my first restaurant. So they called finally with the offer of Top Chef Masters. And at that point in time, I felt like I had a little bit more time to give to it. There's also a big difference between Top Chef and Top Chef Masters. Top Chef Masters, dearly departed, but was really meant to be raising money for charities. So it didn't look as sort of selfish as doing it for your own winning and of whatever grandiose award it was. And it seemed like a little bit less of a risk to your career if you weren't portrayed well and things like that. It was already at a certain mantle. And it's also a lot less stressful because they're not following you around in your dorm or anything like that where you're staying. We all had our own hotel rooms, and we're all, you know, older, more established chefs overall. So it was great to do it, and it was fun to compete. I learned very early on in the run of the show that the more I said that was acerbically witty would probably be used, because a lot of them just stuck their head down and cooked. And right. Floyd Cardoz, love him to death, only talked about his wife and children over and over again. Love him, but that was his one soundbite. Tracy Desjardins doesn't really speak. Mary Sue just wants to make tamales. And yeah, so it was good. I found an opportunity to talk a lot and cook a lot of food, and it was a lot of fun. Great experience.
Do you keep in touch with the people that you worked with on that first show?
Yeah, a number of them I do. I'm very, very close with Naomi Pomeroy, and very close with Tracy Desjardins and Mary Sue Milliken. And a lot of us work, see each other in the same circles, whether it be food festivals, but more so Mary Sue and Tracy are very involved with a lot of the politics of food and sustainability issues, whether it be with No Kid Hungry or the Beard Foundation or the Sea Watch and things like that. So we see each other at different conferences, sort of attributable to that.
So tell me about when they asked you to come back as a judge. Is that a difficult transition to go from contestant to judge?
You know, they asked me to come back and judge. Sort of, they little to my knowledge, they're kind of trying me out on a show that's no longer with us called Top Chef Just Desserts, and Gail Simmons was hosting it, and they had me on with a bunch of Real Housewives people in the Bravo contingent. They often do that. And I remember eating more sweets than I think I've ever had in my life. And
were they disgusting?
Shock. Some of them were good. Some of them were really gross. Yeah. Yeah. Not my thing. But it did well on that and had a lot of fun with it. And then they, they had a opening to really become a regular judge on Top Chef. And so that was the entrance to that. And I did that for a number of years. And now really don't do much with it much anymore. They got Graham Elliott doing it now, and I go on once in a while as a guest judge or things like that. But, you know, once you're on TV in this modern world of ours, you're always on somebody's DVR or on a service, on a streaming service. So it doesn't matter. You know, it's I'm thankful for it. TV has also accounted for about 2% of my working life. So I'm prideful of all of it, but it's not the majority of what I've done.
But isn't it incredible that just having that opportunity to be on TV, you open yourself up to a whole new audience? So even though the television show makes up 2% of your career, does it astound you what it did in terms of visibility?
It does and it doesn't. It becomes, you know, a book becomes a bigger business card than when you're just a chef. And TV becomes a huge business card that follows up after that. And it just increases your reach and what you can do. But most important to me is it increases my ability to hopefully make change within my community, or working with Wholesome Wave and No Kid Hungry have an impact on lobbying on the Hill or whatever it be for, you know, saving SNAP funds and things like that in the farm bill. And so as long as it has that impact, I'm happy to be very proud of it. If it's just about, Twitter followers and things like that, then I think it's a little misplaced idea of success.
Got it. So people really wanted to know kind of some inside baseball stuff about being on Top Chef. Okay. So did you have a favorite chef testant and a favorite dish?
Probably not a favorite dish overall. I think that Mai Lin, and I forget what season Mai was in, she made some phenomenal food and was just always an amazing, ebullient presence. And I think half of the success, being a success on Top Chef, is how you carry yourself and really make it work. I think, but there are a number of people like that who have done really well. I always liked Paul Key's food a lot. The first in a quick fire challenge, he produced a plate of food that was just phenomenally intricate and beautiful, yet so simple. And it was a trout that was just barely cooked and seasoned with a simple vinaigrette and a couple of vegetables on it. But it was just, he just nailed the technique of it. And I think that that's, those are the times when you're like, wow, that's really amazing.
Can the contestants think about recipes beforehand, or is everything off the cuff?
Everything's pretty off the cuff. I mean, you're working with the knowledge base of what you have in your head. I remember older seasons of Top Chef when people used to get in trouble for having cookbooks and things like that in their little dormer rooms. I think that to a great degree that emphasis has passed. But a lot of it's just cooking off the cuff and mixing ingredients that you're comfortable with. But you're going to always be most successful with stuff you've pretty much cooked before and can put a twist on to fit the occasion.
How can the judges adequately judge the food once they've been sitting under hot lights for a little while?
You know, they take it into account. We're told that, you don't take it into account on degradation of something that's beyond the control of the contestant or the chef. If something came out and it's a little on the lukewarm side, man, it's been sitting for 20 minutes. That's not really their problem. So you look beyond that. But, you know, if something's heavily, heavily salted to the point of error, then that didn't happen under a heat lamp. It happened before in the production of the dish. Or if something's just completely burned and wrong, that's the same type of thing. They really do make it pretty efficient that the food gets to the tasting judge pretty quickly.
So what are you, Tom, Padma, what are all the judges doing while the chefs are preparing their dishes?
Tom's on his phone. Padma's getting makeup. Gail's cracking jokes. And I'm just waiting.
What foods do you hate?
Not many.
Really?
I'm not a huge fan of some offal things, you know, but then again, I do. I mean, I love a really beautiful, you know, sauteed lamb's brains and things like that. But there are a couple of things I don't really like. I hate marzipan. That's out of left field, but I really, really, marzipan is the devil.
What? Okay, so what is the one recipe that can mark a great chef?
I think it's simple things that require technical prowess and understanding of food. It's roasting a chicken, or it's cooking a perfect steak, and it's how those are seasoned, and then the processes and technique behind nailing the outcome. I think cooking fish with a perfectly crisp skin is something that takes good acumen and natural sort of chef talent. I think making a really balanced salad dressing and things like that. So it's often sort of chef aptitude really lies in a lot of perfectly done, simple things that Americans do every day, but often don't do very well.
Yeah, like me. What is your most favorite ingredient to use?
I think, you know, there's so many things. I mean, I think that the American palates have changed so much that we want big flavors now. So chilies and vinegar and high acid foods, big spice, complexity, those type of things mark a lot of the food that I think where we're going towards and the food that I love to cook.
What would people be surprised to know about the show off screen?
I mean, just the abundance of hands and people that it takes to make that show is beyond belief. It's huge now. I mean, there's over 200 people working on an episode each time, and there's, you know, 8 cameras and a culinary team now of like 4 or 5 people. I mean, it's just a beast of a production. So, I mean, I think that, you know, you look at a finished show and sometimes you think, oh, there's probably like 5 people behind the booth or whatever. And it's just like, no, it's a lot more people than that now.
Do you want to throat punch picky eaters?
No, I'm kind of a bit of a pacifist. So throat punching is just not cool. I think that picky eaters are, if you're a chef and you get concerned and anxiety prone about people asking for gluten-free this and egg white that, then you're in the wrong business at the wrong time of the millennium, because it's just, you're in business and you need to deliver food that people want to eat.
My last question is what you ate for breakfast.
What did I eat for breakfast? I ate some granola and a really nice cappuccino.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, I want you to tell everybody a little bit about Seed Life Skills, because I think this is a fantastic idea.
Yeah, it's a really, it's a simple premise, is that we've kind of lost our way with home economics curriculum in public schools across the country. So in watching my kids go to school, and I have 2 daughters, and they went through home ec and, or what's called family and consumer sciences now, I just noticed a bit of a sort of revisionist idea of what that curriculum was looking like. And so we got down and figured out that we could create our own curriculum and enter it into the schools. And so it resides online, and it's a free curriculum that any school, public, private, or whatever, can download. But seedlifeskills.org is the address in the URL where you can get that. And really what it is it's just a contemporization of basic necessity skills. It's kind of urban homesteading for every kid. Because to me, it's like, well, we can change the world by school gardens and better school and cafeterias, but nobody was really teaching kids to cook. So if you can teach a kid to poach an egg, and not recipes, but just technique-based ideas, and if you can teach them how to roast a chicken and process carrots properly and make a vinaigrette from scratch and make rice that's not minute rice, then maybe we equip humans and citizens with the wherewithal that they learn these skills in grades 6, 7, 8, but they get to the most difficult times in their life when they're around 20, and they kind of mutter under their breath that, hey, I got this. I can do this. I can feed my family and my people and myself without resorting to something exponentially more expensive or unhealthy for you. So it's just kind of re-equipping humans with skills that have kind of been lost throughout the last generation.
How can people track you down, like find more information about all of your books, about your restaurants?
Yeah, I tweet a lot, and I'm on Instagram a fair bit, so that's at Hugh Atchison, all spelled out. And then I've got a website that you can follow the restaurants, and it's got a little shop where I sell kind of my doodle prints and things like that, and that's hughatchison.com.
These days, getting to the things that really matter in life can be tough, especially with all the distractions and pressures in your life. Your job, managing your family, going to school. But at the end of the day, the things that matter, the things that we really cherish, are the simple ones, and dairy milk is often a big part of those moments. One of my favorite things to do with my kids is to make homemade ice cream. We make batches of chocolate and vanilla using wholesome dairy milk. We make an effort to find milk from local Southern California farms. And my kids also love to make milkshakes made with dairy milk and Oreo cookies. What do your families like to do with your dairy milk? Milk is simple, nutritious, and fresh from the farm. Milk is part of moments that shouldn't be taken for granted. You know, a latte with a friend, sharing a favorite recipe around the dinner table with your friends or family, or just a comforting glass of milk and cookies after school. Take a moment to savor the moments that really matter with milk today. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you gotta get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're gonna love it. Andrew Robin and I met when our kids went to preschool together. He's in real estate and the loving father of three boys with his gorgeous wife, Gila. I found a show that I've asked you to watch and you ended up loving. This show, for everybody, it's called Instant Hotel. It's an Australian reality series on Netflix. So the series follows homeowners who have transformed their homes into hotels and are individually judged by each other to receive the highest scores, with the winner to win an ultimate prize. The show is hosted by Luke Jacobs. The winning team gets an all-expense-paid trip to a super swanky short-term rental in sunny LA, a rental owned by one of the, as they explain over and over again, the biggest stars in Hollywood. So there are five couples. There's mother and daughter team Babe and Bondi from Bondi Beach. She named her daughter after where they live.
Well, she loves the beach that much.
That's like living in Nashville and naming your kid Nashville. It's a little bit weird.
Totally.
Okay, there's the fussy couple, Brent and Leroy, the gay couple from Port Douglas. They're super bitchy, yep. But I love them. Okay. Then there's,
I think someone called them the Queen of Mean.
The Queen of Mean, indeed. Okay, the high school sweethearts, Mark and Janine, they are from the south part of Australia in wine country. They've got a unique home. It's a 50s retro. And the funniest part about it is it's an American 50s retro theme, but they've never actually been to America.
They've never been to America. But he's imported all this stuff from America. It's pretty amazing.
It was pretty amazing. I don't know if I would have stayed there, though, because there were only two bedrooms that had to accommodate 8 people. So they had to sleep next to the dining room table.
Well, one of the things I wanted to touch on with this, but we haven't really introduced everybody yet, is that, you know, the tough thing is you've got, you know, in this case, you have 4 couples that are all strangers staying there. And so anytime there's like people that are sleeping in common areas, that's not really ideal. However, you know, when you're never going to be renting one of these places with strangers. So you're always going to be renting with friends or family or something to that effect. So that part of it, you almost have to take out of their judging. Yeah, it is what it is.
That is a good point. Then there's newlywed Sam and James from Byron Bay. They've been married about a year. She's a yoga teacher. I think he fixes pipes, but they live in this beautiful property that they like to call North Byron Bay, which apparently is absolutely nowhere near Byron Bay.
Supposedly 30 kilometers away from Byron Bay, which is like a 30-minute drive.
And then the last couple is a married couple, Adam and Kathy. They live in a town, I swear to God, called Humpty Doo in the northern...
Probably my favorite couple, by the way.
In the Northern Territory. They live in a huge tropical oasis. And they are the first couple that displays their short-term rental. So basically, this is kind of like, it's a cross between Netflix's Stay Here, which is like an Airbnb renovation show, and Survivor. Because these 5 teams all have to compete against each other to see who has the very best like VRBO rental. And each episode is following these teams as they stay at the 5th rental spot. So people get quite nasty once they hear how other people have ripped apart their home, you know, whether or not they've enjoyed the amenities and the local activities. So let's say the first couple in the Northern Territory, they don't really have any local attractions. So people would rip them apart. And then they would rip apart another couple because they have terrible sheets. Like, for example, do you want to stay at someone's home that has a bed outfitted with black sheets? I would not want to. That's just me.
No. Sounds gross.
So
sounds gross. One of them did have black sheets.
They did. So first of all, I have to say, I watched the show with my kids and they were surprisingly super into it. My daughter was cracking me up because she has working knowledge now about the monetary system. So it was cracking me up. Like, the kid has no idea how much things cost in the world, but started to have an opinion about how much they were charging. Like, she said that $1,500 is way too much for that place, Mom. They should be charging $800. I was like, who the hell are you? Like, what? I have to say, it makes you want to go to Australia. I definitely want to book a trip to Bondi Beach after this. Did you know anything
about those areas? Would you stay in that place?
I would stay...
The hen party house.
I would stay there. I think I would stay there, and I would stay in the luxury palace that is the newlyweds' parents' home, even though I have to say, for people that want to watch that, there's one episode where they go to the newlywed couple's home and they live what they call a 5-minute walk to the beach. And I think that anybody who has used like a booking through like online reservations for booking a hotel will appreciate it, because people lie. Hotels lie. So they said it's a 5-minute walk, and they had to walk through
like swamp. I mean, it was like disgusting. I wouldn't have done it. I don't think I'm like that frisky. I wouldn't have done it. Like, the funny thing is, though, there were logs that sort of crossed over the first swamp, and everybody waded through the swamp instead of walking along the logs. I would have tried to take the balancing act and risk falling in across the logs. But then the rest of them, you could see they were walking through these mosquito infested. It's gross. Gross.
My daughter kept screaming at the television, why aren't you walking around it? Why aren't you walking around it? So I think
My wife didn't like that either.
If you've ever been on a trip, tried to book a trip, and have berated the person that helped you choose the spot, you will appreciate the show. Also, they're all characters. They all end up being mean to each other. The stars of the show,
except for Humpty Doo. Humpty Doo, that couple was nice. Not mean. They ended up being my favorite.
So tell me who your favorite couple was and your favorite, like a favorite clip of the show so people will want to watch it.
Okay. So can I just describe, all five couples in my own way?
Yes.
All right. So the first couple's house. So episode one is at the Humpty Doo house. And this guy, nice, friendly guy. He's really kind of like a, just a nice guy that you would love to kind of hang out with. I love that they send, you know, they have to go to his local attractions, and the local attraction is the Humpty Doo Hotel, which is where he sent them, is like a place that you can go grab a drink, which is basically like a dive bar, but, or maybe it's like grabbing a drink at like, somewhere deep south in Alabama at some, you know, hick type bar, which is fine, which leads me to Mark and Janine. Mark has a full blown mullet and owns it. And I love every second of Mark too. Mark and Janine have been married 37 years. They're from wine country, and they're the ones that have that, you know, unique flair of a house that's really got a museum of California or U.S. 1950s diner. And they've collected everything from Coca-Cola to, you know, what do you want to call it? The jukeboxes to you name it, for 50s flair diner. But that mullet, he goes in the Humpty Doo hotel, which is not a hotel, it's just a bar, and literally just says, you know what, screw all these people over here. I'm going to go and sit and get to go to the locals, sits down with a beer and just starts chatting away. I love him to death. Then you got Sam and James, who I wanted to say they were the most normal. Like episode one, you think, oh, this is like, they're a good looking couple. They're from Byron Bay. They must be amazing. You know, she's pretty. He's, you know, decent looking, looks like a surfer or whatever. Turns out later they're actually sticks in the mud. They want to go to bed early every night. They don't drink, which is fine if people don't drink, but you know, part of it was getting to know everybody. They just really sticks in the mud. And then obviously it gets to you by episode three, when you find out that they're actually not from Byron Bay at all, yet they claim to be. Then you have Babe and Bondi, mother daughter combo, who are stuck up. They act privileged. You know, Bondi is even the worst. She's actually, you know, you want to hate her actually by watching the show. But they have the best entrance ever when they're trying to find this place in Humpty Doo, and they're looking all over the place because they can barely read a map, and maybe it's hard to find. It did look kind of hard to find. And then she ends up doing a 3-point turn. Next thing you know, the car is hanging off a ledge, and they literally have to call like Adam to come and take his truck out and like wrap something around, you know, the car to pull it out of the ravine that she basically backed into. I mean, it was the best entrance ever and explained everything about her. And then you got Brent and Leroy, who again were once, it was actually Babe who had described Leroy as being the queen of mean. The two couples, Brent and Leroy and, Babe and Bondi were like hitting head to head. And, I guess to quickly, what did I have? It was Babe, you know, one of my favorite quotes from her is she was like kind of, I think, angry at Brent and Leroy. And she goes, "Don't think I won't remember this. I have a memory like a steel trap." Wait, I lost my train of thought. I mean, it was perfect. It was, you know, and then anyhow, I think they all were characters in themselves.
Babe and Bondi remind me of that show, Kath and Kim, that show that they had on for a little bit. They're quite funny together and they have great one-liners, and they have this really weird flat in Bondi Beach where all of the artwork is of Barbie dolls. It's really like, you got to watch it. But I thought it was a stellar show. I liked, you know, some of these homes are like putting lipstick on a gorilla. I mean, you're like, why would anybody stay there? But for anybody that's ever traveled, this is right up your alley. Would you give this show like a 5-star, 4-star, 3-star?
I'd give it a 4-star. I think, I mean, I would definitely recommend people watching it. If you like anything home and garden, TV, like this is right up that alley. You know, if you're, you know, into house hunter type stuff or whatever it might be, like I found it really entertaining. I would definitely probably watch the next, I know the next five get to the kind of the second finalist. And then I think there's two more episodes after that that decide between the finalists of this five and the second five. So I would watch, you know, the next seven episodes just to see who gets to go and stay in Leonardo DiCaprio's home.
It was funny. I took the kids to Baskin Robbins and I ended up talking to the girl that works behind the counter and she told me she never watches reality shows. And then I told her, oh, I'm watching this show on Netflix called Instant Hotel. And she said, oh, I just finished the second season. So yeah, for people that don't really watch that many shows, you'd be surprised how much you might actually get into this show. So I highly recommend. Good show. Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. No problem. Anytime.
Did you know that one of my great obsessions are clutches? I think there's just no better birthday gift than a cute clutch bag. And now I'm using the Poshmark app to add to my clutch collection. Did you know that Poshmark carries women, kids, and men's items? You can find a ton of brands to shop from. For example, I am always on the hunt for Chanel, Tory Burch, even J. Crew accessories, and I can find them all on Poshmark. You're not going to believe the deals that you can find on Poshmark. I mean, a Louis Vuitton Speedy bag for only $300. Are you kidding me? Like, insane deals. Poshmark is the easiest way to buy and sell fashion items. Shipping is easy for both the seller and the buyer, which is a big deal, and they've got super fast shipping. You see something you want, you can make the seller an offer. You can even share your Poshmark closet handle by telling your friends and family how to find you on the app. So this is what I want you to do. Listeners of Reality Life with Kate Casey, get $5 off your very first purchase. Just enter the invite code REALITY5 when you sign up. That's invite code REALITY5. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KateCasey for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KateCasey to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/KateCasey. Celebrities rely on Julius Michael to help them create their glamorous style. His signature looks can be seen on TV and at red carpet events from coast to coast and internationally. Priscilla D'Estacio is a professional and celebrity makeup artist. She's best known for her consistent work as the main makeup artist for various reality stars and on TV and movie sets. Welcome to the show!
Hi!
Okay.
Happy New Year, guys.
Okay. I have asked Julius and Priscilla to help me review this week's episode of Real Housewives of New Jersey. Now, you guys may have seen them in the background since they were responsible for the looks of the bride and at least some of the bridesmaids. Okay. Let's go back to the beginning, guys. Margaret, Melissa, and improbably Teresa, Danielle's biggest nemesis of the last decade, were asked to be bridesmaids in what no one coined the wedding of 2018. When you were asked to be in charge of the bridal looks, were you aware that it would be for the worst bridezilla in American television history? Most people don't have big weddings after their first wedding. They don't. And also, most women are not bridesmaids over the age of 26. So it is jarring to see a crazy bride and 9 bridesmaids when you're over a certain age. Am I wrong?
I don't think you're wrong, per se, but I think Danielle has been looking for love for many, many years. And when she met Marty, she fell in love and she thought that this is it. And really just going by like us knowing her, I don't think she expected it to turn out the way it did. And this was like her dream wedding.
Yeah.
Although I think that's why she asked everyone to be in her bridal party. I don't think I don't think she wanted like a parade of old ladies. It's just those are who her friends were at the time, and that's what she wanted.
So one part, like in Danielle's defense, again, like how Julius just mentioned to you, you know, she is a beautiful woman, and I don't think that the way it planned out were her full intentions for it to go. However, with that said, you know, I try to in that moment, if we were to rewind back, I kept asking Julius, I know he's going to laugh at this, but I kept saying, Julius, are they really getting married? Julius, are we in the Twilight Zone? Like, what is happening? And he was just like, oh my God, like it was crazy. But, you know, with that said, and in her defense, anybody, again, being familiar with the bridal industry, destination weddings are stressed beyond. It's a whole different level. So add cameras to that and add housewives, you know, the way I felt she was, and I may be sympathizing a little more than all the viewers out there, but it was a lot to take on and in such a small amount of time.
So when she asked Margaret to wear a bathing suit and got mad at her for not wearing pants, do you think it was fair to ask all of them to wear bikinis when you know that, or bathing suits, when you know some of your bridesmaids are not comfortable in a bathing suit?
I mean, again, for me, I'll jump in, but again, this is something, I've been a bride twice. So, you know, again, in those situations, when you have a bridesmaid, when you're asking, that person, there's things that come with being a bridesmaid. There's roles that come with it. And it's also being a team player. Do I think, you know, in their situation with them being a little bit older, maybe not loving every part of their body, you know, except for Teresa, who was doing a fitness competition in the midst of it. You know, I mean, I would be a little bit more easygoing and accommodating in that sense. But I've, again, witnessed many brides not take crap from their bridesmaids when it's their day.
Crazy.
So that's like a fifth. I'm on the fence about that, you know?
Okay, well, let's say you're in a wedding and someone asks you to carry a parasol and you have to wear like a neon green bodysuit. Are you up for the job?
I mean, I'm up for anything. You can't always, you know, control everyone else's insecurities. And more for, at the end of the day, you want that day to be happy and you want to avoid as much stress as possible. So in that case, Danielle was not for that. She was about what she wanted and was going to do whatever she had to do to get that.
I'll tell you, Julia, if somebody came to me and said, wear this bridal squad, leotard, and then walk on the beach, I'd say, I'm out. Like, God bless. Have a great marriage, but we're not doing this.
Julius,
not on my watch.
Wait, how many friends
Julius,
do you have?
If you were my man of honor, would you wear a dress for me on my third wedding if I got married, Jules?
Well, I have a question. If you say no, are you left with any friends after that?
I mean.
Oh, my goodness.
I would do what I have to do. If it's not my day and I'm fat and I have, like, issues with that, but if Priscilla asked me to wear a bodysuit, I would.
What fights did we miss? Like, what would have been epic television that we may have missed out on?
Well, epic television, you missed me calling Teresa an idiot. Or dumb. What I call it, Priscilla?
To quote Julius, in the moment of silence after Danielle's meltdown, and they were all gathering for a photo, Julius said, Teresa, you cannot be that dumb. And that was definitely not making it to camera.
But what was that in reference to?
Just Danielle was very high strung at the moment. We were trying to get all the girls in order for a photo. And Danielle was a little, you know, above and beyond because we had to do, you know, the girls came in with their hair wet. So we had to take time to do them. And she just was very trying to control the inevitable, which wasn't really controllable at the moment. And so she, her being the way she was, Teresa made a comment and goes, well, can you fix her hair right here? And like Julius was just like, it was at a point that everybody would just like take the moment of silence and run with it. And Teresa gave that comment. It was epic at the moment. We were all dying.
I asked her an honest question. You can't really be that dumb. Like, the lady just finally calmed down post photo, and you're worried about one string of hair? Come on.
There were some fights though that led up to a lot. Like there was a lot of stuff, you know, with Marty's children. There was a lot of stuff, a lot of uncomfort there, a lot of accusations, which she saw bits and pieces of them as to why she was marrying Marty and all that stuff. And you know, they didn't sleep in the room together. There was a lot of things that just wouldn't normally play out on someone's destination wedding.
So the Joes took Marty out for some pre-wedding cocktails because Marty was not allowed to have a bachelor party. Danielle claims Margaret set her up by hiring strippers for her bachelorette party and allowing them to lift her in the air like a dirty dancing aerial pose. Now, why do you know why Danielle felt like Margaret would be embarrassing her having strippers at her bachelorette party?
I don't think that anything that Margaret in that situation was intentional. I didn't, you know, I wasn't aware of Danielle feeling that way, but I know Margaret, and I know that Margaret is a girl that's a bowl of fun, and I don't think she would do anything intentionally. I think a bachelorette party is exactly what you witnessed, how it should go down. I mean, we should all be so lucky to be on some guy's face at our bachelorette party or even have one.
I know, exactly. Okay, then
I'll take a couple of guys sitting on my face. It'll be fine. It's the moment.
as you mentioned, the Joes took Marty out for cocktails. Now, they told him that they thought he was pussy whipped and that he lacked balls. Joe, Margaret's husband, even took it one step further and spilled the beans about a $45,000 wedding gown Danielle had bragged about secretly charging to Marty's black card. Marty said that the reason he was into Danielle was because she was a challenge and she was hot.
There's always a better choice of words depending on who you are speaking about. So if he's speaking of Danielle Staub as a challenge that he's looking forward to, I might reconsider that type of challenge. So I think it's definitely the choice of words and the delivery on who they're speaking about, because I don't know if anybody would want to take on Danielle Staub's challenge.
Right, exactly.
For a wedding day.
Okay, and then Joe came back to the hotel. He walked into a glass door. He tripped and fell.
Yeah, Joe is the life of the party. He's a bowl of fun.
The day of the wedding, as we saw, Danielle was going mental because half the women did not have their hair blow dried. Julius, give it to me straight. What happened with the emails?
Okay.
What email?
Really? Why is this on me? This is what the downfall of my existence with Danielle became. No. What happened was me and Melissa had worked out our blow dry schedule together before we left. The original plan was I was going to blow Melissa out Friday night, and then Saturday I would just curl her. What happened was Danielle added the photo shoot, which threw a wrench into the time slot for Friday, so I never got to blow out Melissa on Friday. Me and her were trying to figure out how we were going to do it Saturday. Danielle was trying to get everyone's hair done that was in the bridal party. And the scheduling just got really chaotic. And Melissa, I told Melissa, let me finish here and I'll come to your room. And Melissa came walking in Danielle's room with her hair wet, followed by Teresa and then Margaret. And I tried to tell Danielle, don't worry about it. Margaret's hair is quick. You know, we'll get it done. Calm down. And it just, yeah, it blew up.
It did look like in the background.
I'm being nice. Priscilla, you fill in the dots.
I mean,
filler on this.
No, you know what it was? Everything that he said, yes, like that's how it went down. But on top of it all, Danielle was definitely. I think there was a little animosity because she naturally had some tension that had built over time with her and Margaret. And just by not excluding only Margaret, she had to take it out on the rest of the team. As to why, you know, with the tension of as to why we were even doing that, to be honest, you know, so there was a lot like she wanted to make sure because we do, you know, Julius has been with Melissa for years. I've been with Teresa for years. So, you know, these women, they're a priority. These are our girls. We've been with them for a long time. There's a lot of loyalty there. And so being it wasn't their day and it was Danielle's, but Danielle had, you know, started using Julius and I. There was definitely a little tension, a little control things happening that all kind of, you know, tornadoed into some of what you saw.
What didn't air that we would love to know?
And once again, I default to Priscilla on that.
I mean, as far as like specifics, like I know there was a little bit of drama with like Danielle getting very, high strung about somebody intentionally moving her veil somewhere. And that caused it was like madness. And then I don't even know. I remember at one point it was like being blamed on one of the cameramen and it was being blamed on one of the housewives. I don't know where the veil went or who moved it, but that was definitely something that I can remember being an issue. Right, Julia?
Yeah.
There was like someone intentionally hit it.
Wow.
You know, like, yeah. But like she made it very clear in a prior episode where she was like, I don't want to feel, she made that comment, you know, I don't want to feel like the dog or with the bone or something. And, you know, that was really it. On top of everything that was going on between her and Marty personally, and then just trying to make the wedding be what they wanted it to be. And then all the drama with, you know, with filming a show and everything, it was all just bundled up into 72 hours.
So now that the marriage has been dissolved, do you think that she married for love to get enough coverage in the episode to be considered a full-time cast member, or she just wanted to refurnish her home with new accessories from Z Gallery?
Well, I don't think that that's like, I don't know, like, as far as that being her home, it was their home,
wait,
you know? So.
Oh, wait, I want to pump the brakes, and I feel like, I mean, I'm like pro Danielle right now. I have to say, Danielle has amazing taste. I wouldn't say that her home is furnished from Z Gallery, and it may not, you know, she made.
Well, I'm just saying, did she want to get married so she could get some new stuff for her house? Because it didn't last very long. This is the stuff that the viewers want to know. You guys have the benefit. You have to remember this. You guys have the benefit of knowing all these players intimately, and we don't. So we're on the outside watching. So all of us are thinking, did this person really marry for love, or did they want to be on the episode of the TV, or did they just want to get new accessories for their house? We have no idea because we don't know any of these people personally.
You're right. Right. You're absolutely right about that. I think Danielle, it's probably a mix of both. I think Danielle wanted to come back. It's obvious. I mean, she doesn't deny that. Danielle wants to be on the cast. Danielle, honestly, should be a cast member. She really is good. She's good TV, despite whatever flaws she and everyone else has. She really does make good TV. Do I think that she married Marty just to be on the show? No, I think she married Marty because she wanted to be married. I think that's
agreed.
All in all.
I can definitely agree with that.
Of being taken care of. You know, there are a lot of things that did go on that no one knows. I mean, I don't want to be involved in her divorce, her relationship, but not everything she says is not true.
Got it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You
and
know,
I know that first
definitely...
because she was sitting in my salon and she was hysterical crying days before. And I read a message that he sent her and I was like, whoa.
That's sad.
Correct. Yeah. I can vouch for that as well. And also like having some heart to hearts, like Julius and I definitely had heart to hearts with Danielle together. And there was, I truly believe a lot of love there. And I think that it was intended to go the right way. And I think that everyone got in over their head because in the beginning, like even the location of the wedding switched a couple of times. So, you know, I think that just, again, it's no different than what happens again being in the bridal industry. These things do happen, and I feel like it just was more magnified because it is a show at the same time that's taking place. But I feel like all the emotions and the marriage was real, and there was love there. And I think that you can't possibly, like, the way it is now to me is very sad. It's disgusting. And there's a lot of mean things out there, but I feel like there can't be that hate if there wasn't that passion. So I don't know if that makes sense to anyone, but you can't hate somebody or despise them if you never loved them in the first place.
I think she thought that they would work through it. You know, like you said earlier, they're in there, you know, they're,
I didn't think Marty was going to send us. Wait, I didn't think Marty was going to send us Venmos for to refund us for our air flight.
So if people want to track you guys down so that you can help them with their looks, Where can they
find
you?
Except for bridal.
Except for bridal. Where can they find you? How do they track you down?
They can find me on Instagram at JuliusMichael1 or on Facebook at JuliusMichael and on Twitter at Facebook. And they could visit me at my salon
in Scarsdale.
When you're in New York, come visit, and Priscilla will come in and we could do a makeover on you.
Yes, we can tag team you. And I'm also on social media or as MS. Oh, I was going to say I'm on there as MS, Miss Priscilla NYC on Instagram, or you can go by my first and last name. I'm anywhere. I will come up, Priscilla DeSavio, and you can contact me right through there. I have my website as well. So,
and I you get her liquid lipstick, and you can look like a housewife yourself.
I want to thank my great guests this week, Hugh Acheson, Andrew Robin, and Julius and Priscilla. Again, subscribe to the show and leave a 5-star review. You can go to my website, loveandknuckles.com. You can find my Facebook group. If you go to the search button and put in Reality Life with Kate Casey, you will not want to miss out on all the stuff that we talk about all week. You can find me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I like to tweet during shows and about shows, and I'm always looking for guests. So if you want to get some scoop on what the shows that I'm trying to track down potential guests for, you need to be on Twitter. And my Instagram, which you don't want to miss out on, is at Kate Casey CA. Now, next week, I've got 2 special episodes coming. One is with Deborah Newell from Dirty John and Laura Richards from True Crime Profile, both Wondery shows. We are going to talk about Dirty John. And then I'm arranging another episode about reviews of different reality shows. And one of those reviews is going to be of Lindsay Lohan's new show on MTV called Lindsay Lohan's Beach Club. And my friend from kindergarten, Michael Kimmel, who is a big time theater director in New York City, is reviewing it. We've already been talking about it because they did like a pre-show. This is what I will tell you. Lindsay Lohan looks like she's already had 2 facelifts and she's probably not even 40 years old yet. She has smoker's voice. She's like so skinny. She's like a rail. And all of these young millennials are talking about how she's an icon and they're all going to work at this resort in Greece. It's like Vanderpump Rules adjacent. It's going to be a good show. So try to watch that prep show before the season 1 episode premieres this coming next week. So have a great week.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just 3 simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.